Talking today with Don Close with Rabobank. Don, let's talk a little bit about where we are. We're just a few days ahead of USDA giving us the next numbers as far as beef cow numbers. One thing that you and I have talked about before, though, you're pretty confident that in 2015 we added a lot of mama cows to our U.S. beef cow herd.
I think that's a very safe assumption. You know, in my office call load and the number of folks that I talk with of various levels of the industry, it seems like it didn't matter who I was talking to. Everybody had some kind of heifer development program up their sleeve, mm-hmm. and between now and a year from now, I think we're going to see both a lot of first calf heifers and a lot of first calf cows in the marketplace.
What you know, we'll obviously just kind of defer to another day the actual numbers as far as because we don't know yet, but. One of the things that we did see in the second half of 2015, the tremendous market volatility. It looks like, you know, it went in a couple of waves, really, and took us down and then came back and then took us down again. How much economic damage have you been able to uncover for the various segments of the beef business?
Oh, it's been extreme, certainly to the cattle feeding sector. You know, just had a horrible 2015. The conventional stocker operator, feeder, back grow yard guys, they had a tough year, but it was the cattle feeder that really took it on the chin in 15. The cow calf sector, certainly we saw a lot of the bloom come off of the calf market in the second half of 15. But if you look at calf prices today in relationship to the historical norm, that's still a sector that's still very appealing.
And I guess they're the ones that still are and have had the opportunity to make money.
Absolutely, they have. And, you know, we did get the January cattle on feed report last week. That we get that quarterly breakdown of steers and heifers on feed, and certainly with the available data that came in the on feed report, while we expect to see it slow down tremendously from the last 2 years, but the first level of data on heifers in the feed yard mix suggests that retention is still going on, at least through the first of the year.
What, you know, we've talked before, what is a good number? In other words, where do we need to end up by the end of 17 or 18 on the total beef cow herd? What do we need today to satisfy our domestic and international demand?
That's such a good question, and it's a timely question because As I was in the office on Monday and we had our in-house staff meeting, some of the modeling work we're doing, our real objective, you know, and as we've talked cow herd expansion in the last couple of years, we thought we could get the U.S. beef cow number back to the 32, maybe 33 million level. In the conversation we had in the modeling work, say this week, we're backing away from that just a pinch. We think the 31, still maybe the 32 million total beef cow number is achievable, but as we go through 2016, we really think that that land rush increase in female numbers will level off and it will be very flat on towards 2020. So the one point about that whole female cow number retention, our expectation for growth is not so limited on capability of industry capacity. Our real worry is with per capita consumption of total proteins and the increase in pork and broilers, and then we increase those kind of cow numbers, what that would mean to total available per capita beef. That's where we're running into a bit of a wall.
So, you know, when you think about where we need to be on the overall inventory, the overall herd, how important is it that we start, you know, regain some of the momentum we lost at the end of 14 and especially 15 in the export market? You know, we need to get our, you know, I guess some folks need to are saying we really need to get moving again.
And we're in complete agreement. The recent report that we released, we've talked about that very thing. We're talking about the changing dynamics in the global production scene. Not only the headcount reduction in Australia and New Zealand from the devastating weather, but also, you know, Australia has signed some very attractive bilateral trade agreements, China, Japan, Korea, that will certainly start to take more and more of their export supply away that won't come to the States. Another intriguing conversation is this slow opening, but expected opening of fresh and frozen beef from Brazil and Argentina coming to the U.S. You know, it depends on who you talk to, what kind of timetable that's on, but, you know, certainly either whether the first half of the year or the second half of the year, expectations are that we'll see some South American product land in the U.S. this year. So that will be that import component to our U.S. lean beef needs. Mm-hmm. Certainly, as we grow the industry, there's just so much we could capture from domestic population growth. So any rebuilding, any new growth in the industry, we're going to be dependent on exports.
Right. Looking to 16, what do you think 16 is really going to look like in our beef sector?
Boy, you know, that one has been such a tough question, Ron. I think this, after going back through placements, monthly placement patterns from June of last year through the 99% placements in December that we got last Friday. So June and July placements, I think, were 101 and 99%. But from July forward, you know, those monthly placements were consistently 94, 96%. As a result of that, available fed beef cattle supply, the first half of 16, still going to be quite tight. Mm-hmm. That could give us the opportunity for a little more pizzazz in this spring market than what some of us were thinking just a few weeks ago. At the very same time, the culmination of this cow herd rebuilding that we talked about earlier today, and when will those calves and feeders start to show up in the market, the increase in placements that we could see starting March, May as the wheat and winter forage cattle come off, and the increase in placements that could be for the second half, we could see a larger fed cattle supply late third and fourth quarter.
Okay. Cool. But in other words, what is that? In other words, we've got the repeal.
Yep.
That's, you know, be careful what you wish for. So with the repeal in place, what does that mean both to the U.S. cattle industry, just the North American industry in general?
My personal bias on that one, I think it was poor legislation. It was poorly implemented. I'm in the camp that I'm very pleased that it's gone. So what does it mean? It certainly, you know, takes away a lot of that labeling, makes business operations to cattle feeders, certainly cattle feeders handling imported Canadian and Mexican cattle, much more economically viable. That is going to be streamline our system. So that's a positive. From what we've seen so far, you take the combination of the devaluation in the peso, the removal of the discount on cool, probably could see some increase in the number of Mexican feeder cattle coming into the States in the next year or two.
Right.
As far as Canada is an interesting situation, as far as herd rebuilding that we've seen U.S. and Mexico, Canada's been very slow to come to that party for a whole host of reasons. We've seen, the fallout from the drought of last year in the western provinces did more damage to that Canadian feeder cattle market than we were given credit for at the time.
Right.
Canadian feed yard placements in December up 14%. Even with the exchange rate difference, the removal of cool, basis levels are just simply better in Canada right now. So we're not seeing the importation of either feeder cattle or fed cattle that we would have expected. But because of the increase in cattle on feed, the removal of cool, I think we better be prepared for more Canadian processed beef to come into the States here into the second quarter and beyond.